The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Cryptocurrency implosion. Nonstop headlines causing market jitters. Inflation trends ease, but still in focus, and a busy week ahead for news and economics. All this and much more on episode number 552 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a great welcome to you. Thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast for the last, 10 or 11 years now. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for being a part of it. Do me a favor, stop what you're doing. And when you see this appear on Twitter, retweet it for me. Make sure that your friends and family and people that you know, they get on the action as well. Maybe you see it on Facebook. Well, put it in your timeline. Do me a favor. Spread the news. I don't know how your week has been. It's been a busy week here over at Horowitz & Company headquarters as we've been trying to decipher a lot of the information that's been coming out fast and furious. I mean, it hasn't been slow. I'll tell you that much. As a matter of fact, quite the difference in just a few months, right? We saw just pretty much a lull, just a lack of any kind of excitement and just a level of complacency and just believing that markets were just going to stay so nicely balanced forever throughout the entire year of 2017, pretty much. And then all of a sudden 2018 hits and boom. I mean, it was like a curveball out of nowhere, a changeup pitch that wasn't expected. And now it seems that we have 100, 200, 300, 400 point swings in the Dow on a regular basis, at least 0.5% to maybe even 1% top to bottom for the S&P and the NASDAQ. Really an impressive level of volatility that has entered into the market. Meanwhile, even that being the case, we saw that the VIX that hit as high as 50 this year has been brought back down to right about just under 16. I don't necessarily think that's going to hold forever. I think, in fact, we're probably going to see another spike in the VIX, and it may even be into the next few weeks as we see some of the things that are going to be extremely important for markets. And a lot of that is on tap in the next couple of weeks. This coming week, there's a lot as well. Now, before we get into some of the things I want to talk about with regard to what happened last week, what we expect next week, and some of the things that are slated to be reported, conferences and things like that with regard to the Fed, I wanted to just mention very quickly, there's two really cool conferences that are coming up that I wanted you to know about. And both of these are related to people that you know, people that have been on the show. And the first one is a conference on May 2nd to the 4th, which is going to be a live in-person trader boot camp. And it's being hosted by Fundseeder, who is Jack Schwager. And you know him from his wonderful series called Market Wizards, his books, where he interviews some of the greatest and most notorious market traders and investors and all these guys that you know out there. Finds out a little bit more about them, some insights, and then really puts it all together so beautifully. Well, Peter Brandt's going to be there, Gary Klopfenstein. The Fundseeder executive team is going to be at FAU, Florida Atlantic University, down here in Florida. And you can meet all of these people. Also, there's going to be basically a hard-hitting boot camp style instruction because it's going to be held at the FAU trading room in Boca Raton. And there's going to be specially selected content. You're going to hear hand-picked presentations that Jack, Peter, and Gary feel are most important for traders and asset managers to learn from their years of industry experience. And one of the things that probably is, it's not for the novice. This particular conference is not inexpensive either. but it's going to be really intense. And if you are a very serious trader, or maybe even a money manager for that matter, it may be something you want to look at. It's only 40 people that they have spots for. I don't even know if they have spots left at this point because I told them that I wanted to tell people about this and get me the information. I'll put a link on the show notes for this episode 552 where you can go check it out. It's basically www.summit.fundseeder.com. And there's a couple of, I think, through, let's see, when is that going to be? May 22nd. So let's see. It's about $2,495, but there is some discounts available. So you could check those out over there. The other one that I want to mention is, you know, that we've had some of the people on, and I've done some work I've written for Benzinga, which is a great news source and information source and resource for all sorts of news, trading information, just great. And we've had Jason Raznick on the show before. He's the founder of it. A good friend of mine, actually. But there is something exciting happening in New York City. It's going to be the 2018 Benzinga Global FinTech Awards, which is the premier business development conference in financial technology. And I'm going to be there. I'm going to be recording a variety of the speakers, the guests, the people that are there that really make a difference in the world of finance, particularly in the world of technology in the world of finance. And I am going to be meeting with them. I'm going to be recording. I'm going to bring the whole podcasting, the whole rig up there. And we're going to have people from like, I'm not sure who I'm actually interviewing yet. It's a little time from now. But people like, let's see, we have firms like Facebook and Citigroup, IBM, Foursquare, PayPal, as well as some of the up-and-comers like Zelle, Sigfig, Ripple. And you can go to bzawards.com, use the discount code Horowitz. That's my last name, all caps. And you get a discount. And we're going to try to do some kind of a meetup or some kind of something there. I'll be actually recording DH Unplugged and trying to figure out how to make it live stream from there as well. But it's going to be a really good time. This conference is really going to be informational. If you're in the New York City area or you just want to come to the New York City, it's going to be in Manhattan. But all the information is on bzawards.com. I'll put the information there as well on the show notes for this page. And I'll try to put it on the main disciplinedinvestor.com as well. But it's going to be kind of fun. I'm really pretty excited about it. A lot of VCs, venture capitalists, and the decision makers from FinTech and some of the really cool technology that is involved in the whole financial industry, not only for professionals, but also for individuals, is going to be there. And you can find out a lot of the things that are kind of brewing and some of the companies that, you know, what they're doing, who they're working with, and maybe get some ideas for investments. So this is going to be pretty cool. The BZ Awards, Benzinga Global FinTech Awards. So I'll be there. I guess we got to figure out maybe, let's see, what's the date of this? It's the 15th and 16th of May. 15th and 16th of May. Midtown Manhattan will be the place. You'll find out all about that. We'll talk a lot about that coming up in the next few shows because I want to make sure that anybody that is interested can get there. But pretty cool stuff. I'm very excited about that. Moving along, talking about some of the things that we need to know about for this week and what happened last week. So I think the first thing that we really need to focus in on is what happened with inflation. Because that was something I had mentioned so many times that is really important that markets are very concerned about. They're looking at this very closely to understand, okay, what is actually happening? We see these good jobs numbers that have been coming in on a regular basis, whether it's the actual unemployment rate or the new jobs added, the ADP, the initial claims each and every week. And it's very strong. No question about that, that we're seeing that these numbers are very strong. Okay, fine. What about wages? Well, wages came in a little bit lighter than expected last the week before when the jobs numbers came out. But what was going on with inflation? So we did see that this big number that we saw, this big jump in January, where we saw about a 0.5% increase, was taken back a little bit. It was only about a 0.2% increase in the inflation rate, the CPI, that was seen in the most recent report. But the year-over-year gain was ticking slightly higher at about 2.2%, which it seems to me is kind of right where the Fed wants it to be. And we also saw the producer price index come out, which increased 0.2% last month. And yearly inflation on the wholesale level on an annual basis, year over year, that is, rose a little bit, but it's at 2.8%. So this is interesting because there's something else that we saw last week. We saw import and export prices. Now, why do you get into the nitty-gritty of all this stuff, right? What's the point of this? Well, the point is that you need to understand, well, there's a lot of things that are actually that work together and sometimes apart, but they work together to figure out what's happening with the inner workings of the economy. Each of these pieces gets put together and you kind of add them all up and you understand what's happening. Well, these things that I'm talking about here are related to inflation. So we know that we have a strong jobs number and that is inflationary. We know that wages have been ticking up a little bit. Okay, that's inflationary. We saw the actual inflation moving up a little bit and then kind of came back, but still the longer term trend is higher. And of course, we're concerned about this because we need to understand what's going to be with the Fed, because we know that you just want to make sure not to fight the Fed. If the Fed is continuing on an aggressive rate hike process, well, you got to be aware of that because prices get adjusted for stocks and for bonds and for commodities and all these things. You need to understand the backdrop, right? It's not just only the earnings, which is of course important. And at the end of the day, yes, if earnings can maintain and keep growing in the face of all this, well, then that's fine. But there is a point, there is that line that, well, maybe there's too much rate hikes going on and they're really trying to pull back the economy and growth will slow and GDP will slow and that's going to eventually have an impact on earnings. Make sense, right? Well, import prices and export prices, we saw that. And the import prices came in a little bit increased, but the export prices were less than the increase. In other words, what we're seeing is that the prices for getting the materials here is higher. And that makes sense because the dollar has been down. But the prices have been increasing faster than it is when we export our items, meaning that margins are in question. The same thing with the PPI and CPI. The inflation for the goods that go into the manufacturing process are increasing faster than they can put price hikes on for the finished goods. That's all margin squeeze. So both of these things confirm that, yes, we have an inflationary environment. And the fact of the matter is that it is having some kind of an impact right now on what's happening with, and will have an impact on what's happening with earnings, because we're going to look at margins starting to see a little bit of erosion. So just keep that in mind. Last week, we also saw that consumer confidence was really strong. I mean, we saw a number 102 on the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index, which is a 14-year high. Most of the analysts that were polled expected the number to decline to 99.3, but we came out with 102. So that was kind of interesting. And the weird thing was, though, that it didn't really confirm out when it came to retail sales. We see that people are really confident, but yet at the same time, retail sales declined 0.1% in February. When you took out gas and auto, which I guess hurt even further, which is interesting because I don't know why gas would have, gas prices are up. But we did see that. That was up 0.3% if you excluded that. Residential construction, well, housing starts fell 7% last month. But the good news was that single family projects were about 2.9% increase. Building permits also decreased by 5.7%. And for the markets, we saw that all three major indices backed up a little bit. NASDAQ dropped about 1.04%. The S&P fell about 1.25%, and the Dow Jones dropped about 1.54%. And what's coming up this week? Let's talk about some of the earnings we have. Oracle coming out Monday. On Tuesday, we have FedEx and Steelcase. On Wednesday, of course, we have that Federal Reserve meeting where there is the expectation that rates are going to be at least moved up about 0.25%. We see existing home sales and earnings from Five Below, General Mills, Winnebago. Thursday, we're going to have, of course, the initial jobless claims, which we see each and every week. Earnings from companies like Carnival, Cintas, Darden Restaurants, KB Home, Michael Companies, Micron, which will be interesting to watch because they have been doing pretty well, the chips, and Nike. On Friday, we're going to see a report on the hard good orders, durable goods, and new home sales. That's going to be we're going to be seeing for the week. So it'll be kind of interesting. I thought we would just segue for a second and talk about some of the chaos that's going on with regard to price moves in the cryptocurrency space. It hasn't been, it has not been pretty at all, unless you turn the charts upside down. But I wanted to kind of mention some things because there's been some commentary out there recently that's really been, I thought, pretty concerning. When you have a lot of people talking about how, you know, this is a good diversification tool and you should have this as part of your portfolio. It's a new asset class. It's an alternative to gold. It's a great way to hedge. And then we see some of the actual results recently. Now, of course, you could pick your poison. You could look at, okay, well, let's go back 3 years and look at how these have done, you know. But let's just take a look on the levels from the high that we saw most recently to where they are today. It's approximately, because this stuff moves around pretty quickly. But Bitcoin hit a high close to 20,000 on the 17th of December 2017. Now it's about 7,500 or so. It's about a 62% drop. Ethereum, high of 1419 on the 13th of January this year. Now it's at about 486 or so, maybe 500. Again, this stuff moves quickly. So by the time you listen to this, it may be 400 or it could be 550 or 600. Who knows? But that's a 65% drop from the high. Litecoin, and I'm just talking about the majors here right now, hit a high of about 380 on the 19th of December, 2017. Now it's about 142, another 62% drop. Bitcoin Cash had the crazy spike and it went all the way up to $4,198. That was on the 20th of December, 2017. Now it's about 860. That's a 79% drop. Remember some of the names remember Stellar? Oh, Stellar, you got to be in Stellar. This thing moving crazy. It went up it went crazy. Well, it was 92 cents at the high on the 3rd of January. Now it's about under 20 cents. Excuse me, not 20 cents. It was under, it's 0.18. Yeah, 20 cents. So let's call it, close to that. 79% drop. And the list goes on, especially when you look at many of these altcoins. So the question then you have to ask yourself is, first of all, is this a, you know, when you come to look at Bitcoin, is this a currency? Is it a store of value? And I don't know. Still having a hard time with this because when you see 2, 3, 5, 10% moves in a day or in a week or even a month for that matter, a 10% move in a month with something that's supposed to be a currency where I'm supposed to keep my money safe and use it for payments and processing of payments, I just don't want that kind of volatility. I don't know why anybody would want that volatility. Now for trading, that's another ballgame. Sure, it's fine for trading. Intraday trading, day trading, swing trading. All right, I'm there. It's just another play where you can find to use maybe technical analysis to hone in on where the prices you want to enter and exit. And all right, I'm there. I have no argument with that at all. Nothing at all to argue. And I got some questions coming. Is it a good time to buy? I mean, we saw this just absolutely get blown out over the last week or so. And over the weekend, you know, this stuff trades 24/7. We saw that there was a continuation of this to, you know, really getting hammered. I mean, 5-10% over the weekend, we saw some losses in some of these. And not to mention, like I said, some of the altcoins that are really getting hammered. So it's a good time to buy, maybe, perhaps, possibly. But I want to cover, again, another point entirely. It is not about, this is great for the future and it has so many applications and this is the next big thing. I don't want to talk about that. That's a whole different discussion. You know, the whole idea that this is going crazy, it's going to go up forever, and or it's going to at least drop down. And yes, okay, fine, it does have a lot of volatility, but it's something you want to be in. Okay, you know, if you want to buy into that and you want to deal with the volatility, or if you want to trade it, have at it. But the whole idea that there has been a lot of discussion about this being a diversification tool and a core component of a portfolio, and that when I say that, I'm talking about a traditional portfolio. I'm not buying it. Is it a new asset class? I guess it is. It seems to be. But does it really have a place in a core portfolio? I guess the answer that I'd have to say is in a core portfolio, where the problems lie is if you're using this as an asset class alternative that is unregulated up until now, we still don't have much regulation on this, and there is the potential for a lot of, less than honorable play in the space, then I just cannot recommend it as a core position. Now, again, it's okay to put a few dollars in there to trade. Maybe even a few in there for hopes that something in the future is going to be really big. And maybe now that they've been crushed over the last several weeks, months, maybe there's some better, I guess we say, value. I don't know how you value these exactly, but maybe there's some better, quote, value in this. But with the potential for taxes and regulation and crushing news and big sellers and sites being hacked, sites being down, exchanges, and now more importantly, with so many people underwater, you know, people that got in, let's say, maybe not the high, maybe they got the Bitcoin at 12,000. I mean, they have a 50% requirement to get back to even, and you got to wonder what's going to happen when it gets back up to that level. It's the same thing that happens with stocks. There's selling pressure at that point. People are like, all right, I got my money back. I'm out. I'm done. I'm not going near this again. And then it kind of consolidates and maybe moves down off of that. But with all this happening and with so many people underwater and the potential for regulation and taxes, it seems like the outlook is pretty cloudy for the near future to be. I'm not talking about, okay, there's a 10% move today from the bottom. Oh, that was a great trade. I'm not talking about trading. I'm not talking about intraday or swing trading. I'm not, that is not part of this discussion. What I'm talking about is it a core position for a traditional asset allocation portfolio? I don't see it. I've never seen it. I think it's fun. It can be exhilarating. It can be really exciting to trade these things if you know what you're doing. But again, there is so much manipulation possible on an unregulated asset that just doesn't make any sense. So don't get swept up in the hype. Because it looks like to me that there are bigger issues at play right now. There's something going on that is really creating a major problem. And why we're seeing this sell-off that is much bigger than the underlying situation. I mean, what happened? You know, if you look back, well, everybody was so excited about this. And remember, all these accounts are being opened and then futures got opened and looked like, wow, this is going to be something that's real. But as soon as those futures opened, it only took a few days for this whole deal to reverse. Once the institutions got involved, once the professionals got involved, the whole dynamic changed. And what's really interesting is that for the most part, they all trade together. It's kind of like the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P, right? They all trade together. All of these coins are trading. If you put them charts next to each other, they almost look identical. One goes up, the others go up. One goes down, the others go down. Every once in a while, one or the other does have a little bit less or more of an exaggerated move. But generally speaking, they all move together. Why is that? You got algos that are now running these things. That's why. I just find something is not right. It was a lot different a couple of years back, or maybe even a year back, maybe even 6 months ago. But things have changed a bit now. But again, to get back to the point of, is this a core position? I think it really makes sense to keep this in a side fund, a trading account, what you call, some people call their play account, something separate and aside, realizing that we don't know where this is going because of such the great amount of unknowns. Not necessarily with the underlying, not necessarily with the technology. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about with the outright the news and the concern about regulation and taxes and you know, people selling and the algo trading. Just be aware. Again, it may be a good price right now. I'm not even saying it's not, but just be aware that I just don't think it's part of a core diversification. That's all. Now on the discussion and continuing of this discussion in the area of cryptos, remember that I was pounding the table on Overstock being a short position for some time, right? I was like, short. This is a great short. Moved up. We got taken out of it. Okay. Then we got back into it. But it was interesting last week and the week before that the price was starting to come in rather sharply into its earnings announcement. I thought that was really interesting. Oftentimes, you see that price starts coming in possibly as people are thinking about flattening their position before an earnings announcement and then possibly bidding it up as shorts cover their position. But that wasn't happening. The price was continuing to come in. And I was like, that's interesting. Now, let me give you the punchline here. Earnings were abysmal. Abysmal. Remember, this was a stock that was $90 at the beginning of the year. And now settled in at about 45 on Friday. We covered the position in its entirety for about a 25% gain on it for our clients. One of the things that really struck me, aside from the fact that the earnings were, again, I thought pretty bad, was just one line that was spoken in the conference call. And I think this was part of maybe a written statement as well, but I'm not sure where it was, actually. I just pulled it. Let me think where I pulled this from. This is from a report of the report. So here's a line. They said that, management said that, they're transitioning to more of a growth strategy because no one seems to care about earnings and losses. They're confident it can be done, confident it could do well with this strategy, the company. And we use machine learning and AI to improve supply marketing strategy. So just go back here. Let's go back. Okay. They're transitioning to more of a growth strategy because no one seems to care about earnings and losses. And they're confident they could do well with the strategy. So in other words, because Amazon was successful with build out, this is my commentary now, because Amazon was successful with their build out losses. Remember that? They were not making any money for such a long time. They were, you know, pouring money back in to develop and to create and to build out their infrastructure and all. Remember that? And everybody's like, okay, well, we'll give them a pass. They weren't showing profits for years. Okay, we'll give them a pass. And then all of a sudden, what happened? They stopped really a lot of that build out and their earnings just went off the charts, right? Comparatively. Now, while their PE ratio is still off the charts, I think that what's happening is that somehow Overstock management thinks they could do the same. I'm not quite sure of that. They had some big losses. There's a investigation on their ICO T0. We know that the ICOs were under pressure to begin with. So I don't know if it gets back towards about 51.75, which looks like it could be a bit of a resistance point. If somehow the stock does move higher and reclaim some of those massive losses that it had over the last week or so, I think that we'll look to start entering a short position again. We initially picked this up at about 64 and change on the short side. So I still think there's the potential for a drop even further here, especially because the numbers that we saw, and if the pressure remains on the ICOs, it's going to be significant on the stock. Overstock, OSTK. Take a look at that. We have that for the game on DH Unplugged where we play, and I picked that up a few weeks back, and I think we're up to about 25% on that as well. So just something to take a look at. The other thing I want to just mention here before we talk about rate hikes and some of the things that are happening with regard to markets and what to look for and some of the things I'm kind of looking at is that this news on Facebook this week where, if you haven't picked up on this news, Facebook had made an announcement, or at least some kind of a public notice, that there was a company out there that worked with Cambridge Analytics. Remember, this is the one that got a lot of the information for the Trump campaign, and they used some of the personal information to try to figure out what would actually push your button to vote this way or that way. And somehow through another company that was doing some kind of polling, and they paid you on Facebook and an app to poll you, and collection of your information about you and a little bit about your digital life experiences. Somehow that information was kind of metastasized in that they requested not only information on you, but also access to your friends and all that. Now that Facebook does that, you know, if you do this, please acknowledge that you know that they're going to request information on your friends and family and whatever else they, you know. Well, it seems that somehow there was approximately 50 million user account information. Not, it wasn't a hack. It was done properly in a way. But it moved up to about 50 million account information on 50 million different users that was then somehow piled up and used by Cambridge Analytics. And that was information that should not have been allowed to be transferred to Cambridge Analytics. And now Facebook is shutting them down and all this. Read the story on it. It's a little bit more in depth than this. I'm trying to give you a quick overview of what's going on. Point is, they have to wonder, I mean, really scratch your head on this. How long will people just keep providing information for free or freely? That's a better word. How long will people just freely provide information to Facebook on Facebook about themselves, where they're going, what they're doing, who they are liking, who they're not liking, and all that? And understanding that the realization is that that information can be grabbed by other places for use in trying to manipulate the narrative to push you in a way that maybe you're not aware they can do, to provide you with news items, real or not, that maybe get you to think one way or another. And whether it's election based or advertising based, or whether it's political in general, or whether it's dealing with the environment, or whether it's dealing with how you react to certain other groups, the list goes on and on and on. But it seems to me that the power of Facebook and why advertisers like them and have been pouring money into Facebook for advertising, because they could target market very specifically because they know everything about you and that information is available. You have to wonder, is there a point that individuals are just going to get fed up with this and say, you know what? I am not interested in this. I don't want people knowing all this about me and how I do things, where I go, how, what I like, what I don't like. And then taking that through some kind of computer algorithm and using it on almost like psychological warfare. That's what it is. It's psychological warfare. If you think about it for a second, what is happening is we're being manipulated because we are freely providing our information about our likes and our dislikes. And maybe you can figure out from what we say in our posts and what we do and who we interact with and what they're saying and what they're doing. Then they can then come out at us, whether it's for advertising or political gain or whether it's for whatever. It doesn't matter what it is, but it's psychological warfare. And it just seems to me that this is going to become a very big issue very quickly. Already we're seeing some news that some senators are really looking into this, and there's a real big concern about the information that was passed on and how it was passed on and how is this even possible to be done. I mean, just people are pissed off. So we're going to keep Facebook, even though the fundamentals are really, really good, just on the side for possibly looking at it as a short, and some of the social media may see a significant deterioration of user friendliness and advertiser friendliness, already saw that Procter & Gamble, what'd they do? They pulled back, I think, upwards of a $1.5 to $2 billion ad campaigns that they were using on a targeted basis with Facebook, and they pulled it back. They're not getting the results. So is it a sign that maybe something is changing here? I don't know. Good company, well run, but relies on advertisers. And that's where their Achilles heel is. Relies on advertisers, and it relies on you and me providing information about ourselves so they can use it and twist it psychologically, because it all is, again, back to psychology. The advertisers are trying to tap into our likes, what we need, FOMO, and really tap into that core to make us react. And that's psychological warfare to me. Keep it in mind. Think about it. Let me know what you think. You can always write me over on The Disciplined Investor. There's a little Ask Andrew button at the top there. Just go over to there and click it and just tell me what you think about this. Am I way off base? Am I nuts? Or is there a day of reckoning coming for social media, particularly for Facebook? That is the largest repository of data information and personal information out there. Well, what do you think? Rate hikes. Let's talk about rate hikes for a second. Wednesday next week, appears that now there's some discussion that's been going on about 4 rate hikes throughout 2018. Now, for a while we were, 3 rate hikes. That's what they're talking about. That's what all the Fed governors and reps have been saying, and 3 hikes. Okay, we're going to be up, 25 basis point each time to 75 basis points, total by the end of the year. Now, there's some discussion that maybe 4. As a matter of fact, a few sell side firms came out with their analysis, and they believe there'll be 4 this year. We've heard from some Fed governors that it is possible. Well, that would mean that definitely, if that is the case, that we'll see a rate hike of at least 25 basis points next week. And then we have to listen to what they say from there. Now, I would expect that to raise rates and come in a little bit, not dovish, but somewhat trying to make sure that nobody gets crazy about this. Nobody gets, oh my God, it's going to be, every single month for now, it's forever, they're going to raise rates. The Fed wants to, tread very lightly here, for the purpose of bonds, for the purpose of stocks, for the purpose of the economy and overall sentiment. So it would seem, though, that the possibility is there. I'm not necessarily sold on that just yet. While they are behind the curve by every measure that you can formulate, whether it's traditional metrics based on simple economics or even the Taylor rule, they are, from what I can see, they're behind the curve. And they have to react. Do they have to do it so fast? Well, so far, so good. They've done slowly. They've been patient. Everybody's happy. Markets are happy. The economy keeps on growing, at least reasonably, although several major changes this week with GDP estimates for the first quarter, under 2%, maybe 2%. Definitely not this 3% number that everybody's been talking about. But 4 rate hikes, the question is, how will markets react? Do they care? For a while, the narrative has been all about that, markets can really handle this. They can continue to move higher even in a rate hiking environment. That's kind of what we've been hearing. But the question really is, I think you need to go one step further. And yes, when rate hikes start, of course, we're in a movement that things are getting better. And therefore, it would seem to me, and probably you would think, pretty logical. If things are moving along pretty well, we just start the rate hike process. Markets can move up because earnings are still continuing to accelerate. Revenues are good. Things are good. It's not until they get to that point, whatever that exact point is, that they start slowing down the economy, that's when it becomes a problem. So how many? Is it three more rate hikes, that all of a sudden we see some slowing down and we see that maybe bond prices are falling a bit and rates are coming up and therefore risk-free assets a better deal than a stock. It causes buybacks to slow. Is it 4, 5, 6? Is it a certain number when the, you know, the 10-year gets above 3%? We don't know. There's still a good amount of as we know, consumer confidence is high and investor confidence is generally high. But again, the big question is, when is this going to be the point? I don't even think the Fed knows. But they're going to try to figure it out as they go along. That's what they're going to do. It's technically our job. You know, it's our job to figure out, you know, where do we see this dynamic changing? So far, it hasn't really necessarily curtailed hiring or many of the other key economic numbers that would be important to look at if, in fact, this was, you know, becomes a problem. So, again, this narrative that markets can continue to move higher with rate hikes, I mean, that's, I think, the sell side, that's TV. That's not, there is a point that that is not going to be the case. I think the Fed is also going to be very aware of the fact that we are seeing an amazing amount of geopolitical headlines that are just coming out fast and furious. In fact, I think it's too many too fast. All sorts of news out of Washington. We got Russia, China, we got tariffs, we got North Korea. We have, you know, things happening in Europe, talking about, you know, talking up the economy, talking down the currency. And don't forget, we have the budget that needs to be passed on March 23rd. Probably going to be one of those down to the wire deals again. You know, we always see this. Down to the wire. So many times before we've seen this, you know, it just makes things very upsetting. So we have that going on. We have the Fed. We have a new central bank chief over in China. We have some important news coming out of Japan. There's things happening with their prime minister where he's been in some kind of a jam lately and there's a lot of confidence being lost there. All sorts of things happening in the next week or so. So just keep it on, keep things on watch right now. Even though, again, fundamentals, generally speaking, for stocks, a lot of stocks are looking pretty good. But remember that about 80% of the movement, 70-80% of the movement of a stock is really also related to an index, particularly with all this passive investing that's been going on. So we need to be kind of aware of that. I got to tell you something. As we're talking about this, and we talked about cryptocurrency to begin with, and they were dropping off out of nowhere, and you know, all of a sudden you see, bam, you wait 20 minutes and you're talking about, let's see what that is. 500 point move on Bitcoin to the upside. You see in Bitcoin Cash, you know, moving up 5% or 8%. Litecoin up 15%, 15 points or 10%. These, again, just to go back to that, this is just as we've been talking from the beginning of this conversation till now, that's the movement. You got to wonder, what is that all about? And they're all moving in tandem, almost tick by tick. So I just want to throw that out there to kind of give you a little bit more of a reality check when it comes to this. And again, if you want to trade it, great. If you want to use it as a long-term investment that's kind of one of those side pocket deals, it's great. But to think about it in your portfolio, it's going to create a lot of nauseousness. And I don't think you want to be nauseous when it comes to your portfolios. All right, I got a couple of questions here, or comments actually, that came in. Let's see here. Got a long one here from Chip Dodd. He says, I've been listening for a few months and wanted to reach out and say that I really enjoyed and appreciated many of your interviews. And he wants me to pull off another talking about currencies. And he said that, from what I understand, after World War II with our gold reserves, we concluded with Saudi Arabia to trade in U.S. oil and U.S. dollars. From there, it was easy for the world to simply trade all commodities in U.S. dollars. Now, China and Russia and others realize trading in dollars is not in their best interest and they're stockpiling gold and all this. Okay, so we're going to fast forward here. So will China deflate their currency so commodities are cheaper in their currency? It will happen with us inflation. You know, we've seen a lot of this go on, Chris, and I got to be honest. I don't, it's hard to really understand what the end goal is here. You know, they want to be the reserve currency. They think that they should have it and move it away from the U.S. dollar because the U.S. dollar is dropping and moving lower. And, you know, it's not backed by anything, but neither are any of these other currencies to speak of. So will the currency moves get to a point that there is real concern with the others that use the U.S. dollar as the reserve and to buy other commodities? I think that is probably going to come to play, but I don't know. I just can't. There's too much going on. There's too many cross currents with that to really give you an idea. I'll try to get a guest on maybe that can give us some more insight into that. But to be honest with you, I'm coming up with a big zero on this. Sorry. Sorry. Kevin Bowersox said, he says, hey, Andrew, what do you think about the theory that hot wage growth numbers at the beginning of these years was just organizations giving their cost of living adjustments to start the year? I know all federal workers received a roughly 2% COLA adjustment and suspect others followed suit. Additionally, wouldn't the tax plan have provided a one-time bump? All these things are actual wages and there was a one-time event. It's not a consistent trend. Fed speak of 4 rate hikes is just so they could pull from later date to look at things and all that. I am bullish on high yield dividend stocks, which have been discounted due to these events. Would appreciate your thoughts on these. You know, it's an interesting question because, you know, we've seen that REITs have been under pressure. Utilities have been under pressure. Dividends, you know, the higher dividend related stocks, bonds have been under pressure. I agree with you that yes, in the beginning of the year, there was some one-time things that happened. We had the one-time $1,000 or so that the companies were giving out to employees. And yes, there was some COLA adjustments at the beginning of the year. And yes, there was some tax benefits that people get, although they get that each and every paycheck. I still believe that there is inflation in the mix. And even if we think only 3 rate hikes are going to be in the year to come, I just wonder how interest rate sensitive products will actually perform. You have to think about that, right? It's not just about the wage inflation, but that's important, of course. Inflation is important, of course, because if we don't have inflation, the Fed's not going to raise. The Fed doesn't raise, well, obviously, interest rate products, sensitive products will do okay. And they can even rebound very sharply. It's all a matter of relation. What's the yield compared to what the yield is on risk-free assets? So I would be a little concerned with some of these higher yielding assets, because the higher the yield, possibly maybe like even junk or even preferred stocks or even some of the high yield, you know, the utilities or the REITs, they could continue seeing pressure if in fact this economy keeps on doing well, particularly because of some of the things that we've talked about with the tax reform or tax cuts and earnings growth continuing and confidence high and the dollar being weak, which is a significant tailwind for earnings. So I would just, I don't want to throw this out there as the inflation issue is just transitory at this point. I don't think we have enough information to say that's the case. So I would tread lightly there. All right. Well, with that, I mentioned all these various points about the conferences, about cryptos, DH Unplugged Tuesday night, of course. That's my birthday, so hopefully you're going to be able to attend live in the chat room. Just going over my notes here of what I want to talk about in this show. Make sure I covered everything here. Talked about tweeting it. That's good. Make sure to tweet the show to make sure people know about it. I think we're done. I think we'll close it up right there. I hope you have a great week. Let's keep on our toes this week with all the news that's going to be coming out with regard to the various political issues and what's going on with regard to, of course, the Fed and what we're seeing with many of the other geopolitical things outside of the U.S. that are probably going to have some impact on markets around the world. Until next week, I bid you adieu and thanks for joining me. I'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.